You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now.
Yeah.
He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats?
Hodgepodge.
Yeah, there's a Modge Podge. Whole Modge Podge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modge Podge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXMFC Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe, hanging out in the green room with David Goss. And a mystery man, like a hobo, who's been traveling the world for the last 4 months, in trains, planes, automobiles. You know that voice. It's Bobby Warshaw.
Man, it feels good to be here, guys. I missed you.
Yeah, really? Like, actually missed us? Or
I did,
just,
very much.
Okay. He especially missed me, because Bobby Warshaw showed up to Toronto, Ontario, which is in Canada, in December, with zero jacket.
No coat.
Yeah.
So Bobby, you have a coat now, because we're in New York City.
I
we
do.
Like
two coats
Dave
now.
Braved 8 inches of snow
there's
to get in
Arctic
here.
Arctic bomb.
Yeah,
it's what they call it.
That's a good. That's a
no cyclone.
Yeah,
no
it's a cyclone it's in like Minnesota.
Bomb. I don't know. It's
yeah,
it's good marketing though on the Weather Channel's behalf.
Yeah.
Do you have a coat? You're staying warm.
I do have a coat now.
Okay. Good to know. Good to know. But you're here, and it feels like you're going to be here for a while. So that's good. Maybe we have a new voice on. Extra Time Radio.
I'm really excited. Although I'm nervous, guys. You guys have really raised the bar on this podcast.
Do you listen?
Yeah, like, name one time you listened to it in a foreign country.
Yeah, in Australia?
Admittedly not in the last 4 months, guys. I'm sorry. I had other things on my mind.
So take whatever Bobby says on this show with a grain of salt. We have a big one coming up for you. Of course, there's a ton of news. The 2018 MLS schedule is out, so we'll talk about that in just one sec. You can go check it out on MLSsoccer.com. Download it into your calendar, whatever you use, iCal, Google Calendars, whatever that might be, probably the easiest way. Dennis Hamlett, New York Red Bull sporting director, will join us after the break. That's because Sasha Kleshchen, after Dave and more so Matt Doyle said, don't blow up the core.
You're a liar.
You can defend yourself
dude.
In a second.
You're a liar.
Well, they traded him to Orlando for Tommy Redding and Carlos Rivas. So they got younger, they got stronger, they got faster, but they lost the best chance creator in MLS over the last two seasons.
You think pound for pound Carlos Rivas benches more than Sasha Kleshchen?
Yes.
Wow. That is the test that I'd like to
see. Yeah,
I
mean, this is also not the NFL combine, but
feel
like Carlos Rivas,
stronger.
Certainly from a pace standpoint, and just, you know.
I was just
that doesn't result
stronger.
In goals or assists, so it may not matter. We'll get to that one in just a second. Remember, next 3 months are going to go crazy. Combine starts on January 11th. All three of us will be down there. All the coverage you could possibly want from that via MLSsoccer.com and Extra Time Radio. U.S. National Team January camp is coming. The announcement is on Monday per Stephen Goff of the Washington Post. 30 MLS-based players-ish, he says, will be there. Super Draft, January 19th in Philly. Preseason begins January 22nd, a Monday. CCL Round of 16, February 20th, opening day, March 3rd. It's going to come fast and furious. To help you follow it, Extra Time Radio, subscribe us, rate us, and let's get into it. The schedule is out. You guys know the format by now. 34 games, 17 home, 17 away. A little bit of a switch this year because LAFC comes in and unbalances things. It was 11-11 East and West. So, as always, teams will play their non-conference opponent once. And then they play each of their conference opponents home and away. But then in the, Western Conference play one additional team. So, 3 times one team. And then Eastern Conference play another team in their conference 3 times twice. I know it's all kind of random here, but
it could have been worded.
It could have done a better job there. So there's that. That means, by the way, that Cascadia is now unbalanced because the Vancouver Whitecaps are only playing their Cascadia Rifles twice each. So that's an interesting note there. A couple stadium openers. We know those for sure. You've got Bank of California Stadium opening on April 29th on FS1 against the Sounders. DC United have to wait all the way until July 14th, the day before the World Cup final, to open Audi Field against the Vancouver Whitecaps. And Portland Timbers as well are waiting a little while to open up the new Providence Park.
Do you think that blows up the Cristiano Ronaldo or Leo Messi to DC United rumors?
I don't know. If I'm them, I look at it as a marketing opportunity where I get to travel the U.S. and hit as many markets as I can, a lot of appearances.
No, but why would you sign a player who wouldn't be there for your first game in your new stadium? right? You're not going to risk a World Cup finalist.
Oh, you were talking about the World Cup side. Okay. Yeah. I thought you were talking about
Bobby
this.
Knows what I'm talking
about. I thought you were
about.
Talking about this window. I was like, go get him. Go
I'm
get him,
I'm not sure that they have him on their discovery list. I think somebody else has Messi on the discovery list.
Good point. That would be a great story.
Details, David. Details.
Yeah. Let's talk about DC United, because 12 of their first 14 are on the road, and those two, we still don't know exactly where those will be played. Their home opener against Houston, but we, like I said, we don't know where it'll be played yet. Are they dead in the water already, just by function of the schedule?
No. Don't say that.
I'm just asking.
But how many Sporting KC?
I think they had like seven.
Okay.
Had like seven.
And then what's the most recent one that I'm now forgetting?
Didn't San Jose do it?
We've seen TFC have some
Houston
of these
did
long
it for a while at BBVA Compass Stadium.
Yeah, we've seen TFC have to do it back-to-back years because of these long stretches. Then you get home and you get – oh, Atlanta this year. You get on a roll, you get hot.
No, not Atlanta. Atlanta had Bobby Bedard.
No, but Atlanta ended up with those, what, seven games and 11 days at home,
sure,
whatever it was, because they backloaded the schedule for
sure.
Mercedes-Benz. You end up on a hot stretch, and players want to play games. Once you start playing, you get home. Yeah, it's going to look bad in June, but I think once you get to September, they're going to be in the race.
It just, to me, it comes down to the fact that this is the kind of adversity that Ben Olsen wants from his group, guys.
Ben Olsen was built for long road trips.
Yeah, you know, it sounds weird, but the way Ben's mind works and the way he thinks about building a team – he is okay with this weird scheduling, this weird adversity for his team, and he'll see it as an advantage. Even if he doesn't see it as an advantage, he will definitely word it as an advantage to his group. And if there's any team that can sustain this, it is a Ben Olsen team, because in order to survive this kind of road stretch, it's not about your physical ability. It's not about how good you are at soccer. It's a mental test. Can you refocus? Can you recharge every week? Can you deal with the demands of being the away team for, what do we say, 12 of 14 games?
Yeah.
And the tools that it takes to do that are the tools that Ben Olsen talks about day in and day out. Can you grind? Can you compete? Can you fight as a group? So to me, I would expect Ben Olsen to take it as an advantage and to try and harness this adversity.
I mean, he better take it that way. I will say that your team admin better be on point, and you really need to have a good training staff. All that travel, those young legs, that helps. But when I say team admin, I mean scheduling, flights, hotels,
buses,
making sure that you get in a place that, like, you get recovery at the right times and your guys feel rested to a certain extent and it doesn't become a slog and you can maintain that kind of mental toughness you're talking
Andrew,
about.
Andrew, I love that point because team admin was so important. You think about little things, right? What time is a flight? Because you get to the airport, are you waiting in line? Are you waiting to check your bags? All these little things add up. Are you getting off the flight at a time you'll hit rush hour, get into the airport? It sounds dumb, but over 3-4 months of it, they add up, and you need every small advantage you can get. And this is what the best organizations do. They think about these details. They hire talented people both on and off the field to make sure everything works.
DC better be thinking about those things, because they cannot go into Audi Field just stinking up the joint bottom of the East.
Well, the problem is, does this kill our resolution for them, which was just be fun? Because everything you're talking about,
it might.
I totally disagree with this. I heard you guys say this the other day, and I couldn't have disagreed more.
Why?
Because DC United, it's not in their identity to be fun, both who they are
what
as an organization.
Identity?
Yeah.
This is the point. If they have an identity, it's not fun. That's okay. I think as a league, guys, we need to harness teams that just aren't fun.
DC United that had 35,000 people at RFK, those teams were fun.
South American
DC
talent,
United
American
over the last
talent,
6 years is different. The
league's changed.
Yes, in the league, and in that period, they did not invest because they were trying to get in this new stadium. Now they did last window. You expect them to this window. Hopefully, they need to, at the very least in the summer. I'm sticking to our resolution. Be fun, DC.
How do they compete with these other organizations? You have to find your competitive advantage. At this point, if you're not going to spend $12 to $15 million on a player, then your idea should not be to be fun. It should be, how can we beat the team that's going to spend $15 million on a player? And it's competing. It's staying compact. It's defending smartly.
Well, they did it against Atlanta 3 times last year. So take that for what you will.
Yeah, by doing the thing.
Yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, I know. Dang it. World Cup 2018. American players don't have to worry about that one, but there'll be about 24 MLS players that head that direction. A 9-day break this time around from June 14th to 22nd. The final of the whole tournament's on the 15th. There's 2 MLS games that follow after that final. 2 p.m. Eastern is Atlanta-Seattle, so that's a cool one to come off it. That's interesting. All-Star is going to be Atlanta. We know that. August 1st is the date on that one. Still don't know the opponent, and this is one of my favorite things about the schedule this year. I like Heineken Rivalry Week. I don't think we need three of them. So this year we have one of them, and it's like, in my mind, perfect. It goes from Wednesday to Sunday. It starts on that Wednesday with the New York Derby, New York City FC, and New York Red Bulls, and you have Houston FC Dallas the next day, and then on Friday it's Orlando City Atlanta, and then LA Galaxy LFC to follow on that Friday, then Saturday TFC Montreal, then Sunday Red Bulls DC, Portland, Seattle. That's the way it's supposed to be to me, and it's also at a time of the season where it's like it's make or break. It's not in April and everybody's trying to get their feet underneath them. It's end of August, right before the stretch run. Stock up on that Tuesday. Beer, snacks, food, seamless gift cards, frozen pizzas, whatever it is. Mark it on your calendar. No weddings. No, like, summer
vacations.
No one's
allowed to get married now?
That's Heineken Rivalry Week. There's only one of them this time around. Got to do it. That's it. I mean, AT&T presents Decision Day once again. There's some juicy matchups there. I think maybe the juiciest of that is, well, there's two now because Benny Feilhaber got traded to LAFC, in case you missed that. It's Sporting KC LAFC, and then it's Orlando, New York. Because you have Sasha maybe spoiling things for his old team, and then you have Benny maybe spoiling things for his team.
Atlanta's playing Toronto on Decision Day. They played last year on Decision Day as well. It was probably the best game I saw all season.
Boo.
So I'm in favor of I'm in favor
that's
of that being
the backdrop that I expect
of a yearly tradition is just those two teams bludgeon each other with speed and athleticism and talent. You know, at the end of every year.
Yeah, that'd be nice, Bobby. What stands out to you from this schedule release? We did the show earlier today. It was a lot of fun. You had to really sink your teeth into it. Like, as you come away from that and you think about the slate, well, what stands out?
There's something cool about the less is more philosophy of this year with the schedule, especially with Heineken Rivalry Week. Before, they tried to give us a few to pump it up, and it's just cool that it's at a place now where it's just one, and there's always something – the sexiest things are always less is more.
Mm-hmm. What, you got anything?
No, Bobby's giving you less.
Yeah, do you not see what I'm doing?
I liked it. Okay, Dennis Hamlet's coming out of the break. Go check MLSsoccer.com. All the schedule stuff is there. One small note that I do want to point out before we move on. Total American national TV appearances. Canadian teams dominate the Canadian national team schedule for obvious reasons. Atlanta has the most.
National TV, not national team.
Yeah, it's
they also dominate the national
team.
They
do. National TV appearances. Atlanta has the most, I think 17, LAFC 16, NYCFC is 14, Red Bulls 14, LA Galaxy 13, Orlando 13, Seattle 13. What, Seattle's all the way down there? Sounders fans got to be upset. They invented appearances on national TV.
What, can I ask, what should these teams on the lower end, the Salt Lake, New England, Minnesota, Columbus, Colorado, what should they make of it? Should they be mad? Should the organizations, the fans?
Philly.
Is it their own fault?
No. I mean, part of it is there are teams that are investing in big-name players which want to be seen by fans across the league because this isn't about just your market, right? And then on top of that, they need to get a lot more people to move to the city they live in. Because it is about the markets
as well. It's basically ESPN, Fox Sports, Unimas saying, where do we think eyeballs are going to come from? What teams are going to inspire people to watch? Now, Toronto FC is four games on American national TV. Now, they'll also be on national TV 24/7 in Canada. That also means that MLS Live has more value because you get to watch arguably
TFC,
the best team in the league a lot more. So,
and TSN broadcasts, which are great broadcasts.
Yeah, they are really good broadcasts. So I think it's more about, you know, take a look at, you know, think about if you're in Philly, whether a person in Kansas City wants to watch your team, which is not a knock on Philly. I like CJ Sapong. I like Alejandro Bedoya. I think they're going somewhere, hopefully into the playoffs. We talked about it on the last show. But at some point, there's tough decisions being made by these broadcasting execs.
Can I parlay this into something about expansion?
Sure.
And that
parlay away.
And that these numbers are very indicative of what's taking place with expansion right now. That MLS's next frontier is improving their national TV ratings. Because they want them to be bigger, but also with bigger ratings comes more money and comes more revenue. And as they look at expansion teams, TV ratings matter. They want teams to enter this league who will enter and go in high on that list and bring more eyeballs to national TV and thus more money in the future.
I think you went on a very, very thick limb there, and I would tend to agree. Let's talk about the trade. Sasha Kljestan and $150K in TAM to Orlando City for Carlos Rivas and Tommy Redding. Dennis Hamlet will talk to us in just a little bit after the break and try to shed some light on this. But let's get our initial reactions here. Carlos Rivas, right now he's 23. He'll be 24 basically this entire season. He had 5-5, 5 goals, 5 assists in less than 2,000 minutes last year. Still a lot of Orlando City fans, you know, ourselves included, watched a lot of those games and said, man, final product from Carlos Rivas. Tommy Redding will be 21 this year. He'll turn 21 later in January. He's got 31 MLS starts to his name, almost 3,000 minutes. I'll let the center back among us and sometimes defensive mid talk about Redding. I think for the Red Bulls, it's pretty clear here. It's go young. It's Sasha's in the last year of his deal. We're not afraid to trade a captain. We think we got a good deal. He didn't exactly fit what we believe to be our style of play going forward. What's the scouting report from you on Tommy Redding?
There's so much a player. To start with Tommy Redding, we talked about in the Periscope the other day, to play the way the Red Bulls want to play, high pressing, high energy, it often leaves the center backs exposed. It makes your forward step higher, your center mid step higher, your winger step higher, your outside back step up a little higher, and it makes your center backs who have to stay near the halfway line cover all the ground that's been exposed by the other guys. And it demands athleticism. It demands a certain type of center back, and Redding could be that guy for them. So while he didn't fit into the Orlando system, he might fit into this more specific Red Bull system.
He also did fit into the Orlando system. Like, he had a good year, and then he got injured, and their back line just completely fell apart. And
yeah, it did.
As a 20-year-old, it was hard for him to try and maintain his quality, but you saw it this year. So it's not like a complete unknown. This is a guy who can play at the MLS level. Clearly, Red Bulls want to go younger. Clearly, he has potentially a U.S. national team future, so that's a guy that you can tentpole around going forward. On the flip side, Sasha Kljestan, a little bit older. Carlos Rivas, he's going to attack. He's going to go after guys. If this system fits him better, he has the quality to be a difference maker in MLS. I don't know that he has the consistency to build a team around, but that's not what they're built. Bringing him in for. They're bringing him to be Lloyd Sam from 2 years ago, or to be Mike Grella as well. They're bringing him to be a difference maker in his space, and then let them develop the guys around them to be BWP and then someone behind him, the stars.
Is this an admittal from the Red Bulls that with Sasha, their ceiling was not high enough to keep him around and re-sign him? Because he's going to be 33 and 34 in the next two seasons after this one. He's 32 right now, and generally you don't bet your future on a number 10 in that sort of age profile, and you generally don't re-sign that guy unless you truly believe that he's going to keep rolling on or the price is just too right. You know, what's the message being sent from the Red Bulls about Sasha Kljestan, what their future was like with him and what they think it might be without him?
There's a few factors. Whenever a player is as known and as big a name, especially in a club as Kljestan, you always risk just him getting not complacent, but just a little too big for his britches, right? We saw with the red card against Toronto, the tunnel fight. Maybe that's the kind of thing that only happens when a guy's at a club long enough, when he only wears the armband. And Arsene Wenger used to do this at Arsenal and move guys along when they would get too big for the club.
It's worked really well for him.
I was going to say, Red Bulls fans have that pit in the stomach where they're like, how many titles have Arsenal won?
Right, so that's one thing. That's one thing at play here. That's a small thing, but something to think about.
Sure.
Two, and more importantly, we always talk about the chances created like it's a good thing. But when he's creating all the chances, what about the other guys? Right, if your game is flowing through one person, it probably means you're lapsing in other places. So maybe Jesse just believes in his system enough that he gets rid of the star player and it lifts up everyone around him.
Yeah. And on top of that, I fully agree with that point. Also, can the game flow a little bit more?
Exactly.
Or can it be
You're
more direct?
On.
And not saying Sasha's not,
I agree with
but
the direct
it has
part.
To come into the middle for it to get to his feet. He has to look up, assess the situation, and that quagmire they get into on the top of the 18 in big games.
Side to side, side to right. side. We talked about it over and over.
Right.
It just wasn't working.
So Carlos Rivas comes in, changes that a little bit. Sean Davis, I've seen play in the USL level. I actually saw him beat Bobby Warshaw head to head, and I came down to see Bobby after the game. He's a guy who does play that role. He's more of an 8 or 10 than he is a 6, and last year he struggled, and people got on him, and that's because he wasn't playing in the position he plays in. So if you look at those assets and you say Tyler Adams, Felipe, Sean Davis, and then we really go in and invest in one more attacking player, I think maybe you look at the sum of the whole parts, and it's better than what it was with just Sasha in there.
Kaku, that's the name. That's the name. Romero Gamara from Huracan. We've talked about it. It was on Twitter. I mean, Huracan announced this on Twitter. And now the agent talk is coming. We'll ask Dennis Hamlet very directly about this coming up in just a little bit. But if they go out and sign this guy and they spend millions of dollars and you're a Red Bulls fan, don't you have to sit back and say, you know what? It's not that it's okay that they traded Dex. It's not that it's okay that they traded Sasha, but I understand the direction And I see the investment and the commitment on the financial side as well as the decision-making side to make tough decisions to go in this direction.
Yeah, you do. But at the same time, they need to have a good year this year because you can't – if anyway they take a step back this year, they were sixth last year in the East. So they can't do it in the regular season. They won't make the playoffs.
Well, they have to sign whoever this difference maker might be.
And then they have to go at least to an Eastern Conference Finals because if you start going in the other direction, then you're proving that you're not doing everything you can to get to MLS Cup.
We've like harped on the Red Bulls.
Yeah,
we're
going to
do a ton of
much.
That. Yeah, we're going to do that with Dennis Hamlin.
Let's give talk Orlando the City. Love.
Let's talk Orlando City. Jason Kreis is under some pressure. The whole organization really is to get to the playoffs. The Wall demands more. They re-signed Dom Dwyer. They got a 3-year deal done with him. That's really good for them. We knew that would probably happen given the trade. Also, rumors Josue Coleman from Cerro Porteño, a 19-year-old attacking midfielder potentially on the way to the tune of $3 million or so. Kyle Larin might take off, but they've committed to Dom Dwyer. Now you have Sasha Kljestan, the premier chance creator from a quantitative standpoint in the league. Mm-hmm. Orlando City looks like what in 2018, Bobby?
My biggest question about Orlando City lately has been why Kreis has not tried to emulate his diamond from RSL. I mean, he had the most effective system, perhaps a unique system in league history for one of the most dominant sides in league history, and he hasn't tried to replicate that really with NYCFC or Orlando, and I'm just waiting for it to come out. I'm waiting to see the diamond.
He did go grab Dylan Powers.
Perfect for that system.
Yep.
And he's got Will Johnson. And he's got
Yotun.
What about what you said about DC United 10 minutes ago that the league has changed?
No, it's a really good point. No. So here's what I would say is two things, is that Kreis doesn't have it either in his soul, as a natural forward to do that, or in his coaching repertoire to do that. He also has the tactical nuance to create a competitive advantage in a different way than Benny, right? Kreis sees the game in this possession, this diamond structure, which Benny doesn't have. So they're each finding their competitive advantage in different ways.
Okay, let's talk Sasha and his positioning there. And when you say, I liked that because it, quieted Bobby down for just a second. But if they are going to spend $3 million on Josue Coleman and they go get Dom and re-up with him, yeah, there's a mixture there, I think, of like old MLS, old guys, and like prime guys, and then young guys. You said something to me the other day, Bobby. You don't think Sasha's going to even play the 10 for them. You don't think that in the diamond he would be the 10.
Yeah, we all agree he's not a 10, right, at his best. His best position.
Yeah.
He's an 8.
Yeah.
Is he a 6? Is he a deep line playmaker where if you protect him with two other guys, he will pick out passes from deep and or facilitate your game?
Personally, I think he's an 8. And that was one of the things with Red Bulls was your ceiling, blah, 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 was, yeah, you need to sign the 10 and slide him back and let him be the best he could be. But moving on from that, I think his best position is an 8. Also, you look at Yotun, he plays that role. Yotun likes that long pass from that deeper number 6 position. So I think they could fit together well.
So he's a shuttler in the diamond. If
he's
they
a
play
shuttler.
The diamond.
Well, that's why I don't know that the diamond works.
For some reason, in American soccer, we have this inferior complex where if a guy is a good passler, a good shuttler, is not enough. We keep on saying, where's
shuttler
our 10?
It's because
well,
the
what are you
shuttler,
have a,
man.
But also, you're going to have a 32-year-old player play in that role?
And Will Johnson's in the same kind of boat when it comes to age.
He's got the – so I would guess both Sasha and Johnson both have a better engine and a both understanding of economical running than most other guys do, but it just makes me so angry, so angry when we have a good soccer player, just a plain good soccer player like Sasha and Benny Feilhaber, and we say, oh, they're not a good enough 10, they're not a good enough player. Why can't in this country you just be a good soccer player who can pass and receive and know how to go throughout a game even though you're not a 10?
Bobby's fired up. That's a good thing. We're going to break. On the other side, Dennis Hamlin, the sporting director of the New York Red Bulls, he will walk us through this trade. We'll also talk Benny Feilhaber because he changed address as well from Sporting KC to LAFC. We'll be right back.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Okay. Oh yeah, we dripping up and getting paid. Ow. Ooh, don't wait.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. I am Andrew Wiebe with Dave Goss in the green room. Matt Doyle and Bobby Warshaw coming at you in just 1 second. But for right now, we have a very, very special guest. New York Red Bulls sporting director Dennis Hamlett is on the line to talk to Sasha Kljestan trade and what's going on for the Red Bulls in this offseason. Dennis, how's it going?
Going pretty well. Trying to stay warm. How about you guys?
I mean, we're not warm. We ventured outside the house. You're the lucky one, man. So, you know, maybe you're going stir crazy, but I'm sure you have a lot of work to do. Let's get right into it. You've now traded your captain in two straight off seasons. That takes some confidence, but more than that, it feels like, to me, it takes a commitment, a specific vision, a direction from the top down at your club. Tell me, Dennis, right now, what is that vision? What is the direction that you're operating under as the sporting director of the New York Red Bulls?
I think you're right. You know, I think, it was a hard decision, but I think it sort of speaks to our vision, our philosophy in terms of what we are trying to create here in New York, and our belief in terms of our style of play, our philosophy, our belief in younger players, and giving them the opportunity to excel. And, you know, I think last season kind of showed us that, you know, sort of reinforced our commitment and our belief to that process when we saw the growth of Tyler Adams, Sean Davis, Aaron Long, Michael Murillo in terms of how they were able to step on the field in MLS and in Open Cup and show their ability and do well with it and gain such experience from playing in the big game in the Open Cup, even though we didn't get the result we wanted, and then taking Toronto to the wire. So, you know, we feel pretty confident in our belief, and that's something that we'll continue to do, and that's why we're always looking for players that fit our style of play and guys that we know that can come in here and make a difference.
So you make this trade, and we've said it, and we talked about it ad nauseum all last year with Dax McCarty, two captains out in two off seasons. As sporting director, as the man pulling the trigger, as the guy at the top of that technical structure, what's it like trading a captain? What are the conversations like with those players? What are the conversations like with other teams? Do you have to go talk to BWP or Luis Robles, have a call with them after a move like this to reassure them or to let them know what direction it is or to tell them, hey, you're not being traded? Or maybe they are. I mean, it feels right now like there's no sacred cow, so to speak, on the Red Bulls roster.
Look, I think, first of all, it's never an easy decision whenever you trade a player. And obviously when he's your captain and an important player within your team, like a guy like Dax and like Sasha, it's never easy. So, and what we try to do is do it in the utmost professional way and try to make sure that we have good communication with the player and his representative to make sure now that everyone's aware of the situation. And so there are no surprises. You know, I think we all learn from last year's situation, we were difficult. And so we tried to make sure that this one was managed the proper way. And you know, in some ways, I think we did a pretty good job. There's a few rumors that are out there of him going to different teams, but those are things that we can't control. And we just made sure that we continue to have dialogue with the player and the representative to make sure now that, you know, we come to a place where, you know, it benefits both parties. You know, I think at the end of the day, as the sporting director, I think that's the ultimate goal, is to make sure that we make decisions based on what we think is best for the club moving forward in terms of what we want to be able to accomplish on the field.
You mentioned last year, and that's a lot of part of this conversation. And then you talk about Tyler Adams and Murillo and the other players. When you look at last season, was it a success? Is that something that, when you look at making a move like this again, you dropped in the standings, but you went to the Eastern Conference semifinals and got knocked out tightly. You mentioned the Open Cup finals last year and the model from what happened after the Dax McCarty trade considered a success?
Yeah, look, I think there are many successes in terms of last season. You know, I think when you look at it in terms of our development of our players that came through from Red Bull 2 and our younger guys that came in and had such an amazing impact on our team. And then obviously, you know, with the run we had in the Open Cup and getting to the conference semifinals. So, look, we weren't happy with, you know, the position we ended up being in. But at the end, you know, we still felt pretty confident in terms of our ability throughout the season, how we grew as a team how we were able to manage difficult games and knock out games. Our response in those games, you know, showed how our maturity level grew as the season went. And so when you start to see all these boxes that are being ticked in terms of the growth and how we're playing and how we're committed to our style of play, then it makes it somewhat a little bit easier in terms of when you make big moves like this. And so, you know, it's something that's a continuous dialogue with myself, the coaching staff, and making sure we're always evaluating and looking to see how we can get players to come in here and the ultimate goals, which is try to win an MLS Cup. And so, you know, that's what we're trying and we're striving to bring to our fans here in New York.
How many teams were interested in Sasha? You mentioned those rumors. We had heard them going all the way back to maybe even last January, kind of trickling out as well. Was this the sort of situation where you had a lot of different offers and a lot of different conversations to sort through, or was it a pretty straightforward honing in on Orlando City?
Like I kind of mentioned, and you know, when we had the press conference this morning, you know, when the season ends, you know, I think that it's a crazy time for all sporting directors slash general managers, because the phones are always ringing and people are always, you know, checking, you know, where you are with your expansion list, you know, which guys you're protecting, you know, the reentry draft and stage one and two guys that you're not going to bring back. And so you're always having discussions, and some are always at small levels and some are a little bit higher levels. And the minute that something, you know, resonates with another team, then I think then you start to sort of hone in on that and that becomes more of a serious conversation. And you know, with Orlando, we felt, you know, after a couple of initial talks, it was pretty serious that, you know, they were committed to getting Sasha. And we were adamant that, you know, we wanted two players to come back, because, you know, we went through last season in terms of, you know, you get the resources, but sometimes the resources don't help you in terms of if you don't have anything to bring in. And so we felt like we wanted to make sure that they had two players that we watched pretty closely throughout the year, and then we got to know them pretty well from playing against them, that we felt like they have certain profiles that can come in and help us help our team. And so, you know, I think that made it an easy discussion to sort of move things along.
Let's dig in on those players, Dennis, and we'll start with Carlos Rivas, a guy who came into the league with that DP tag, young DP for Orlando City, had a lot of hopes laid at his feet. He hasn't necessarily met those, but I look at his last season, he's got 5-5 in less than 2,000 minutes. We know he fits the profile. He's young, he's powerful, he's pacey. He probably needed a little bit of that on the wings. What excited you about him? How do you think he extrapolates to your system? Because I've said over and over to people who've been talking about this trade, it's about development for you guys. You got to get the best out of Carlos Rivas.
Yeah, I think that's the ultimate goal. You know, I think it's sometimes a change of scenery is important for a player. And so we feel, again, there's certain profiles, characteristics that we like in players that we think that can fit our system, our style. And then the goal is to get those players in our environment. And then, you know, we have an amazing coach and an amazing coaching staff that I feel that can develop those players and make sure now that they give them clarity, role, and understand, you know, what how it is to play the Red Bull way. And I think when you look at Carlos, again, like you mentioned, I think, you know, you're right, this season, I think there's a stretch in the middle of the summer before the Dwyer trade. I think he was an important player for him. He was playing with tons of confidence, and, you know, his ability to score goals and set up goals was clearly shown. And so, you know, again, he goes back to, you think about it when he was a younger kid and the experiences he had with the Deportivo Cali playing in the Sudamerica and the Libertadores. So, you know, he's got experience in playing big games. And I think now for us, we're excited. You know, I think he's excited that he wants to come to New York and is looking forward to this new challenge and this new chapter in his professional career. So for us, you know, like you mentioned, his ability, which I think we don't have, just a pure 1v1 going at guys and powerful and with pace, and he's got a, you know, wicked left foot, I think are will complement what we have. So I know our Jesse and our coaching staff, they're excited to work with him.
The other player acquired, Tommy Redding, a young center back. A lot of people excited about him. I'm one of them for his potential, but is he a guy who can make a difference soon? What is it that he brings to your team?
Yes. Look, I think, you know, we've, you know, the history of since I've been here, it's been, you know, we've we always want to make sure that we have enough center backs, because the way we play, it's an important center backs become an important position, because, you know, they're a lot of times are in 1v1 situations and are left to put out a lot of fires. And so when you look at Tommy, and I go back and watching him down in Costa Rica when I went to watch Tyler play, you know, he has a lot of those, again, characteristics and profiles that we think he can fit well in our environment. And the challenge is going to be for him now to coming here and be ready to work hard and to take the information from our coaches, because we feel that, you know, that there's, he has certain qualities and the potential, the ceiling is pretty high, but it's now how quickly can he wrap his mind around to playing the way we want to play and using his tools, because he's an aggressive defender. He likes to step forward. He's confident in the ball. He's got pace. He's got a good body and he's good in the air. So, again, he's got a lot of the boxes that when we think about a center back that can do well in our system, he checks them. And so I think, you know, both players are, we were excited. You know, we spoke to both of them and they're excited about this opportunity.
You know, Dennis, I look back at last year's super draft and all the furor around the Dax McCarty trade. And partly that was because he was your captain, certainly. But partly it's because we now knew the price of Dax McCarty when it came to allocation money. And in this deal, it's mostly players, but you do have the $150K in TAM that's headed to Orlando from your coffers. Just to help us understand, to help our listeners understand, to better build a kind of a working knowledge of the MLS trade market, why is that $150K TAM necessary? Why is that something that Orlando is asking for and you're given?
Look, I think the league has changed. The landscape has changed. And I go back, you know, 5 years ago, you didn't see this type of blockbuster trades. And I think part of that has to do with the influx of resources of GAM and TAM, which the league is giving each team to try to make the product better. And so I think when you see that, then teams are a little bit more reluctant to make these types of moves. And teams are also in a position now that there's more competition to and more pressure to make the playoffs. And so teams are looking for players that can help them, you know, now. And some teams are looking more about the future and building. And so it just depends on which side of the spectrum you're on in terms of where you feel the pressure and what you think is your team needs at the moment. And so for us, you know, in this case, the 150 help them the same way that, you know, the 150 helped them sort of close the deal to make sure that they felt there was a comfort that it was a sort of win-win situation for both teams. Just like, you know, we made it clear from the get-go that, you know, if we're moving Sasha, it needed to be two players, and the two players were Carlos and Tommy. And so I always believe, you know, I go back to my days when back with Chicago, when you want a player and you really feel good about that player, sometimes you give up a little bit more and it doesn't matter because you have a strong belief that you think that player can come in and help your team. And so, you know, that's for us, that's been our mindset. And I think you've seen some teams now that they value certain players. And so, you know, it's good discussion for all of us out here to talk about, well, did they give up too much? Or did they get a bargain? And so, I think that type of excitement, that type of dialogue that's out there is good for a league, and it's good discussion points and sort of carry on into our season and makes it, you know, you get to mark that calendar date, because when the player shows up for that game, then you can see, okay, well, you know, who's winning in that trade.
Carlos Rivas comes in and you talk about what he can bring to your team, but Sasha Kljestan wasn't a part of your team. He was the engine of your team. Mm-hmm. He's the best chance creator in the league over the last few years. How are you going to fill in that role? I think that's what Red Bulls fans a lot have been reaching out to us. Hard to fathom what the Red Bulls lineup looks like without Sasha Kljestan.
They're all saying Romero Gamara, Dennis, all saying Kaku.
Now, you guys know, look, obviously there's reports out there and it's a delicate one, and you know, and I'll let you guys kind of leave it at that. But look, we know that the important part of Sasha and what he brought to our team, you know, and I think when we look at it, it's sort of twofold. One is we do need a replacement of that position, and you know, we've got some targets out there that we've identified, and we're in the process of trying to bring one of those players in. And the second part, which I think is just as important, is we need to surround Bradley Wright Phillips and our attacking core with better options, because, you know, if I go back to 2015, you know, our attacking core was pretty exciting. You know, we had Mike Grella, we had Lloyd Sam, we had Bradley, we had Sasha, And those guys all each took on part of the role of helping our attacking force be dynamic and explosive. You know, and I think after that, we kind of sort of went a little, we took a little bit of a dip. And so now how can we help get Bradley more help? So, you know, I think last year we saw for a good stretch in the middle of the summer, Danny Royer, you know, was excellent. And it kind of took off some pressure from Bradley and kind of freed up Sasha some more. And now I think with the addition of a guy now like Carlos and Danny and some of our younger guys that have come through, Ben Fessicourt, Florian Bailo, Stefano Bonomo, who understand the way we play, we feel, again, it's the players we're bringing in now that understand our system, it's going to help us. But we do know we need to address and get the other piece. And so that's something that we are working on, and hopefully we can get an answer to that shortly.
I know you can't get too specific there. That's the nature of the deal, Dennis. But reading between the lines, when you see Huracan come out and send that tweet and you see some of the figures being bandied about in South American press, like I said, read between those lines. It says that the Red Bulls are willing to invest in that next level attacking talent. Is that the case? Because people look at the Sasha deal and say, oh, maybe you're not trying to win now. But if you're sitting out in the transfer market saying maybe we might spend a lot, that's kind of a juxtaposition that's pretty interesting.
I think our league is changing in that. When you see, look, I think, you know, you look at our Atlanta when they came in and their ability to go out and spend. So I think that sort of kind of jolted the rest of the league and say, listen, you know, our league is moving in this direction. And so, you know, young players, exciting players, they can come in here and be difference makers. I think that speaks to the league. And obviously with that, you know, you have to increase your resources to try and get those players in. And so, I think, you know, the new LAFC team, you know, that they went out and got a young DP player. So I think that's the direction we're going. And we want to make sure now that within our club, how we sort of assess and we find the right player to come in here and help us. Because, you know, at the end, like I said, it's still about us trying to win a championship. And we're going to try and make sure we put the best team on the field to give us that opportunity to bring our trophy to our fans.
One of the successes of the Dax McCarty trade was the emergence of Tyler Adams this season and his impact. Who do you look at this roster and think is the one that maybe can emerge from this trade to give you that impact, to step up, that fans should be watching for? And then on the flip side, you talk about winning a championship. Is it tough to build a core that can win a title when guys, you know, leave at a certain age and you want to have young players because of the system?
Well, look, I think our ability to show how we grew last season in big games with a young team, I think that speaks volumes for our future. Because, like, when you look at our roster and the key guys and their abilities to play important minutes in big games, they're under 25. And so that gives us that core to build on. And it's now trying to find that right balance, make sure now that we can sustain that core. And again, and part of that is because the way we play, we do need younger players because we're not changing the way we play. We're going to come out and we're going to press and we're going to make it difficult for you. And that now requires for you to have guys that can sustain a grind of 34 game season, plus the Open Cup and playoff game. And so we understand what that the requirement that comes with it. And so we have to make sure now we get that right balance. And so, you know, when you talk about what other players now currently, look, we still feel confident that expecting big things for a guy like Sean Davis now, because I think that, you know, he's a guy that we feel can step in that part of the field and can help us with assists and goals, because I think he has a quality. I mentioned, you know, Rivas, you know, obviously Tyler Adams. So again, we have the players in place, and the key part for us is, you know, they understand our philosophy and the way we want to play it. And so that's key for us to make sure we can move forward.
Now, last one here for you. We mentioned Tyler Adams. We love hype trains on this show. I don't know if you've heard us yell about it. Young players who perform in this league is probably the thing that gets us most excited. What's his role going to be with this team this year? We saw him kind of play that forward destroyer with Toronto in the playoffs. I'm also wondering how many voicemails you have over the course of this conversation with concrete offers for his services. That's only partly a joke. What do you see his future with the club looking like?
I think he had a breakout year, you know, and we're excited about Tyler and Tyler's progress. And I think the thing that speaks volumes about him is he's such a competitor, and doesn't matter where you put him on the field, what part, you know, if it's right back and a wing back, is it a six, is it an eight, is it a 10? It doesn't matter, because what he brings is just his level of competing, his will to win, and his drive that speaks volumes. And so, you know, I'll leave that up to Jesse and his coaching staff as far as where they want to play him. But I think in some ways it doesn't matter where Tyler plays, because we know exactly it's not going to change, because he will cover the ground. He will make it hard for the guy he's playing against. He can help you in the final third. He can set plays up. You know, he can be a guy that can man mark a guy. He can be a good six. So it's just, he's such a special talent, and you know, we're excited that he was able to have the breakout year, and we're looking forward to bigger and better things.
Red Bull Sporting Director Dennis Hamlett after a huge trade within MLS. Sasha Kalashin to Orlando City. Carlos Rivas and Tommy Redding headed the other direction. Dennis, thank you so much for joining us, man. Good luck this year, okay?
Thanks. Appreciate it, guys.
All right, interesting stuff from Dennis Hamlett. I think the idea that they weren't going to try to go get assets, i.e. Tam and Gam, they wanted to get players.
Yeah.
That's interesting to me, and it sounds like they got the guys that they ultimately wanted, as well as just kind of measuring the marketplace as a sporting director. Any thoughts on that one? Red Bulls fans in particular, and Orlando fans, if you got them. 401-206-0MLS. It's a hot take hotline. We're going to get to the mailbag in just a second. We got to talk Benny Failhaber. He is on the way to LAFC. He's already doing like the hat reveal thing, and he did the goofy backwards hat thing, and everybody loved it. He's Benny Failhaber, and he's just a charming guy. But the price is this. Sporting KC get 400K, 200K in Tam, 200K in Gam, and now you got Latif Blessing.
Any Cam in there? Any Cam in
no
there?
No Cam. Cam is not, Cam, not a tradable Cam's asset. Cam is not tradable. He's off the market. Nobody asked about Cam.
We all thought that before the influx of Tam, so there might be a number they could hit that you'll be convinced
I don't think so. I don't think that's happening. What do we make of this move? I kind of hinted at on the last show, we talked about resolutions for Sporting KC, that it might be time to move on from the Benny era, and lo and behold, they moved on.
Yeah, dude, you're exactly right. SKC just needed a change in the guard. They've needed it for 2 or 3 years. If you look at their MLS Cup team with Beisler, with Sinovic, Chance Myers only left this year. Espinoza, although he wasn't on that championship team, was just kind of a backbone for those glory years for SKC, and Failhaber. It just felt like they'd lost that urgency that was their calling card.
And also, Benny, before he got to Kansas City, was kind of known for being inconsistent and like not living up to what people wanted from him on the club level. He had moments of brilliance, of course, at the international level. Some of those with Bob Bradley as well, by the way. But it just was never the sort of thing where he was going to be a guy that you looked at every single season and said, we're getting the best of you for 34, which is not a knock on Benny, because even when he gave you the best that he had for 20 and like 75% for the other games, he's MVP caliber player at times.
That's such a good point, especially with a coach with Vermees, who is very system oriented, and Vermees believes in himself, doesn't like having an inconsistent player who he doesn't know what he's going to get and doesn't know he fits in the system every week.
Look, I think he had a great
year. I was about
to
say Benny Fell.
He had a great career in Kansas City.
Yeah, there's no question that Benny Failhaber fits for Sporting KC. It's like you said, changing of the guard. He is the most valuable asset of those guard. No one's coming.
I disagree with that.
Who wants Matt Beisler for more than Benny Failhaber?
I will guarantee you that Matt Beisler was on the market, he would command way more than 400K.
Center.
From
way
who?
More.
Dax McCarty.
You're the one on the last show that's sitting here saying every single team in MLS would want a center.
Dax
back.
McCarty got 400K. He's better than
Beginning. Yes, he is. I believe that he would have a higher value in this league.
Matt Beisler.
Yes. The market has changed since
Green
Dax
room
McCarty
hot.
Trade.
Green room getting hot.
The market has changed. I firmly believe this.
I understand.
Outside of Dom Dwyer, Beisler is the one with the most value.
With the level of center backs in this league, you're nuts not to think that Beisler
fine.
Is a
that's
higher
fine.
Value.
Matt Beisler wrote a children's book about living in KC. He's not going
I
anywhere.
I know he's not.
Right. Zusi, though, Sinovic, Roger Espinoza, the rest of them, Benny Failhaber has the most value.
And Benny Failhaber is also the one that you would move.
And
based on contract and based on
and
age.
He'll be happy going
so
to LA
disagree.
To
right,
play under
right.
Bob.
Of the quality of player you can get at right back, Zusi is the higher value.
I'm not getting stuck into this right now.
Yeah, we're already stuck in, man.
It's not just quality of player, it's market.
Look, Crozet is gonna get the keys, I think, in Kansas City. Johan, you are jacked up and I like it. What's this mean for LAFC? He goes and reunites with Bob. you talked about with Sasha that, like, players don't have to be the number 10 to be a good player. Is he a number 10?
Can Benny be anything else?
Yeah.
Benny was more like a deep line playmaker.
No, I understand, but now at this age, is he going to play
even
that
more
role
so
for them?
Even more so. He sees the game better. He's more willing to. When you're young and you're prideful, you want to be the 10. You want to be given the keys. When you're a little older, you see that your end is near. What's the word for that when you see your end is near?
Your mortality?
Your mortality. You see more your mortality.
I don't think this is mortality. Benny Fellhaber's going
to
live a long,
fruitful
life after soccer.
You're playing mentality. You're willing to take on a new role, especially since LAFC already has a bunch of creators and attackers.
Yeah. There's a lot going on in the attack for LAFC, which is why it sounded like Sasha made sense, because I think he's more versatile than
Benny. Also makes sense that they wouldn't be able to get him because they didn't have players to give up.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely true. If that's what Red Bulls were looking for, I think it's a great move. One, because he's played for Bob before. He's been successful under Bob. He has the knowledge of the league, which is one of the things that there's a lot of money being invested right now. And I understand Atlanta brought in a lot of new players. That doesn't mean it's all going to work where everyone's going to get it day one.
You're saying he's going to be kind of like a Jeff Horenowitz?
Not at all.
Not like on the field. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. All right. Some other news to catch you up on before we go to break. Real Salt Lake signed Spanish forward Alfredo Atuña, TAM forward. He last played for Cadiz in La Liga 2. He had 17 goals and 40 appearances. They like him. Still a lot of mystery around Yurimov Sisyan. Doesn't look like he'll be moving right now, but we'll wait and see on that one. Sam Stajkal, our own, reports the Fire are close to signing Bastian Schweinsteiger for 2018 with a 2019 club option, a DP deal, that would be, he says. And this is some interesting news for Atlanta United. Ezequiel Barco skipped the first day of preseason with Independiente to try to force a move to Atlanta, per reports, in Argentina. So we'll see what happens with that one. As always, let us know what you think. 401-206-0-MLS. Call or text us the Hot Take Hotline. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. If email is your thing, break's here. We'll be right back.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Did you ever believe? Yeah, this life owes you more than you have. Try and take it from me.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental, hanging out in the green room as the snow falls around us. I have no idea how I'm getting home. No idea at all. Andrew Wiebe, David Goss, Bobby Warshaw, used to more comfortable climbs, i.e. Australia, is here with us. Thank you, Bobby. Into the hot make, excuse me, the mailbag.
I
tried to mix Hot Take Hotline and mailbag. It didn't work out for me. 401-206-0-MLS. Call us or text us. Extratime at MLSsoccer.com is the email. Let's get right into it. And Dave, take it away.
Longtime listener, first time texter, David Goss.
I think I know him.
Sexy name if I ever heard one.
I think I know him.
From Port Washington, New York, otherwise pronounced Gas if you're incorrect. Yeah. Wants to know two coaches. Which coach would you most want to play for in Major League Soccer? And then which would you most want to be your life coach in your current life?
I love this question.
In Major League Soccer.
Dave, we got to send some swag to this David Gass out in Port Washington.
He would prefer another set of J-Lab Bluetooth headphones
would
if
he?
Possible.
What happened to these?
No, I just want two.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, wait. We lost these headphones?
No.
Okay, I'll let the player start this one off.
Coach I would most like to play for would be Patrick Vieira.
Legend.
Because as to play that role, defensive mid, who better to learn from? And it's also a style that I believe in. It's a style, period, which is important. And it's a style that I believe in.
I like that, yeah. You're a good addition, Bobby.
The guy that I would – hey, thanks, guys. The guy that I would most like to be my life coach, man, there's something about Wilmer Cabrera that's just so loving, isn't there?
Yeah, he is very encouraging. But, yeah, he's the Bobby Whisperer. Is that what he's going to be? He's gonna take you to the next height. What about you?
So I actually hadn't really.
Really? You just put it out there?
Yeah.
Just floated it in
that
the mix.
Guy.
So
that
I think
guy.
Play for, I'd say Oscar Pereja. Just like listening to him talk about culture and family and the team and the game inspires me.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, what?
Dude, Oscar used to, when we, my rookie year, when he was our reserve coach, and we'd have 10 reserve games a year, we'd have, you know, a 10 a.m. game, and he would show up at breakfast at 6:45 in the morning, fully kitted out. He would have his full tracksuit. He would have his studs on. We're waking up. We're, like, getting our coffee, scratching our eyes, and Oscar's there. Hey, man. morning. We're like, Bobby, he's got his full boots laced, ready to go. You would love him.
Yeah, so I think that one. For life coach, I need more of a kick in the butt than a, like, you know, buddy-buddy with Wilmer Cabrera. Yeah. So it's probably PV.
I was going to go PV as my life coach, too. Just based on the fact that he feels like it's like he accomplishes a lot of different things that I didn't even know about.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, you're a great coach. You're a GM. You, like, manage this whole organization. And then you go do, like, triathlons now.
Right.
So I feel like he would demand more always from
me.
He
would also bust in my door at 5:59 and be like, you're late. Get up.
You got yoga this morning. Yeah. Why are you not doing yoga? Okay, so we're going to share a life coach. That works out for us. That'll probably lower the cost. Less Tam and Gam.
Weeby's all about nanny sharing now.
Dude, nanny share. Let's see. Who are you going to play for, though?
I said Pareja.
Oh, yeah, Pareja. Mm. I'm having trouble deciding who I want to play for because nobody's going to sign me. So. Yeah.
Vieira's a great one because Vieira's a legend.
He's the obvious one, I think.
Ooh, the obvious
one. I think so because he won a World Cup, and he's like, as you said, Bobby, he's committed himself to a style, and it's both aesthetically pleasing and successful on the field. And plus, I get to live in New York still. So I'm going with Patrick Vieira, too. That's a lazy way out.
Wow.
But hit us up with
just
your,
took yours.
I know. Hit us up with your reasoning on both of those. We want to hear from the folks at home. 401-206-0MLS. What else we got here?
Road Rambler from Hawaii. So I think he went from the Appalachian Trail, and now he's in Hawaii.
Yeah, he said he was in Hawaii.
Which is legendary. Houston Dynamo sign Onyewu and Pepe to rotate with Senderos and create the most washed-up yet effective back line in the league. Kicker to that one is Bobby Warshaw gets into
and
the
Zlatan
rotation.
And yep. if Zlatan gets signed, that's a great matchup
for
there.
Sure.
Those three just buzzing around him, good stuff.
Joe in South Carolina, Weeby, you can't have a resolution for more hype trains. Man, you already have too many hype trains.
No. Like doubling down on the hype trains, okay? That's all the deal.
And that's just like you're allowed to have as many as you want?
Yeah. Like we got plenty of rails. We can, you know, we got the logistics set. The schedules are down. Keep hype training it up.
I appreciate that. Okay. DC Mike Adelaide, ETR. He wrote us an email. It was a bit longer. I'm going to condense it down, but basically saying that the league has changed. And he said, in 2010, you could open a stadium, sign a fringe USMNT player, an Argentinian playmaker, and some players with experience in Germany. You had a great year. But in the post-Patrick Vieira, Dos Santos, Jovinko, Orlando Wonderwall years, it just doesn't
feel
like it.
Feels like one of those names doesn't fit with the other.
Which one?
Don't make me answer that. Keep going.
Also, Bobby's over here smirking because a DC United fan is literally like parroting or like had his saying his original point.
But he's saying this is back to what Matt Doyle was saying, which is the league needs to learn how to sell. He said, we don't want to sell. Exporting players is fine, but you don't care about the players. You don't go to the games. Fans need to recognize the players on their lineup or this league will be in trouble.
I think we're all on record multiple times in this show and saying that there has to be a way that MLS gets into the international market in a more effective way, both from the valuation of the players here as well as the way that people look at the product. I mean, they're both affected. And it also can
– So you're against his point now.
What do you mean?
He was saying don't sell.
Oh.
He's saying don't sell, which is what Doyle was saying for the resolution.
It's not just a fire sale. I mean, but it's intelligent, you know – business behind the game. Like if a guy has an offer that's your valuation or more, you should do it.
Totally
have faith in yourself to reinforce.
I want to give him credit for writing the email, but there's also something we need to say.
That's backhanded.
But he's also wrong.
Okay.
But he's also right in the sense that we do need to give fans a reason to come to games, and that right now MLS just has a dearth of personalities on the field, right? We just don't have enough players who we connect with as people, who put themselves out there as individuals and as humans. So we don't
need
to...
What's the profile of player that can do that?
Oh, I'll give it to you. Hardworking out of Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania. Went to a Pac-12 school, got an engineering education.
Well, you say this. I would argue multiple things, right? The reason that I'm now sitting here with you guys is because every interview I put myself out there. I would tweet, like, we don't have enough players doing that now, not just to get a job for after, but to make people come to the stadium, right? So we just don't have enough players.
How do you help young players?
Yeah, so you're saying everybody can do it. It's not like I'm a star, I have established career, I have money, so I can do it.
And obviously don't be an idiot, right? Don't be a jerk off who's saying dumb things, but just be yourself. Be likable. Don't be scared. Right now, athletes around America are scared. They feel that it's a combative with the media and with the fans, which isn't the truth. Now that I'm on this side of it, the players can only do what they do because of the media and the fans. It's a full ecosystem that has to work together, and players right now are too scared. Players need to put themselves out there and realize it's okay to tweet. It's okay to give real answers because everyone wins.
Yeah, he's I like that.
He's basically saying he's sold on the Kellen Acosta model now, which
Let's
is
go.
Slapping
yeah, which
down
is
the haters,
bap, bap, bap.
Which has been beautiful to watch. Speaking of that, we did our year-end reviews. He said, in regards to FC Dallas's 2017 collapse, I haven't heard a good enough explanation, so here it is. The injury absence of underrated utility man and quality human Ryan Hollingshead, UCLA quality, was the reason they fell apart. Braden from Seattle.
That's a take.
We did do a year resolution, New Year's resolution, and with FC Dallas, we still can't. No one can still document fully what went wrong last year.
Right, and I think a lot of that is because of like behind closed doors stuff, and it's just precipitous drops from a lot of guys after a great start that you expected to push on, from the Matt Hedges, Walker Zimmermans, you know, Mauro Diaz never was able to get back and be the Mauro Diaz that he has been in the past, but no shock there. Achilles injuries.
But they played well without him.
Yeah, I know. You know, Barrios was good. Urruti was unsettled and inconsistent as Urruti is. It's a lot of drops. A lot of drops in form.
Love the point, though, because this is exactly right. Hollingshead's around the league are undervalued. Even if players not on the field, he has huge value to the team. Two, one thing we don't talk about enough in Dallas is just, and they try, they train at night to try and avoid the heat, but if you train in that heat every day, if you live in that heat every day, if you play games in that heat every day, there's going to be a natural drop later in the season compared to a team that doesn't do this. It used to happen to the Chicago Cubs in baseball when they played home games, and they had way more heat throughout the season. They, too, would have a drop.
They play day games.
They would play day games. Sorry, I experienced it in my three seasons with Dallas. It happened to us. We'd have a hot start, and later in the season, we just collapse.
But is it a year-to-year issue? Because 2016, they won Supporters' Shield, right? Yeah, so is it, but do you, I'm serious.
That might have been the anomaly.
Those core being there, do you think it gets worse 2017 to 2016 because they went through a year of that physically? Or should you be trained to it?
I don't have a good answer to that. No, it's a really good question. I couldn't give you a good answer.
That's okay. How about a good one for this one? What will it take to see more Americans in Liga MX? Will we ever see Pulisic play for Club America?
I mean, I think there's already been a good number of Americans.
I thought so, too.
Liga MX. I didn't think this was like a big problem. Now, there is some news right now that Jonathan Gonzalez maybe has a decision to make. Mexico making a play for the young midfielder.
What was my New Year's resolution for the U.S.?
Call him
Just
up.
Call up Jonathan Gonzalez.
Yeah, get
it
him
was
in
that
there.
Simple.
Give so he would have
band.
To file.
Just give him the armband.
He'd have to file a one-time switch to get this done. I would hope that at the very least Dave Sarakin is calling him. And we asked Dave when we had him on to talk about that November camp whether he knew his name, whether he tried to call him, and he kind of said he did. But
I have talked to some other people in U.S. soccer as well, and they've not been gloating about him or as high on him as I expected. And I wonder where the level of interest in him has been over the last year.
I think it's glowing, not gloating.
Well, if they gloated about him, it means they're excited about him too.
Yeah, okay.
Nice. I appreciate that. Yep. And then we've got one really upset Minnesota fan, Scott Owens, who basically has a question, which is Minnesota United showing every team how to not build a roster? He then has a checklist. Building too slowly in 2017, check. Got too many at one position, the wings,
I like
check.
How he capitalized the wings.
Yeah.
That's yet another MLS indie band name.
Yeah.
The Minnesota Wings. Let's
that's
go.
That's true. No, if it was Doyle's band, it would be the Flankers.
Yeah.
Not done research on players, Demidov, check. Given crap excuses, it's cold, check, overspent on talent, Molino, check, no DPs out of fear of getting it wrong now, check, still waiting for signings when other teams are making theirs in 2018, check.
It's really cold in Minnesota, and it's getting a little
dark. It's cold like Minnesota.
It's getting a little bit dark from Loons fans. Now, the one I will dispute there is overspending on Molino. We still don't know that was an overspend.
Right.
I think that he can be a true difference maker in this
league. And also, as you said, the market has changed.
Yeah, and look, look at their team. If you're talking about needing help around you, he didn't have very much help. Now, did he?
No.
No. So we'll see what happens this year. But they got to figure it out in the market. It's Dimidoff. It's Rasmus Schuler. It's a number of the signings they brought up from NASL that didn't work out. Dunlady's
the man, and he dominated.
Christian Ramirez, we're happy about those. Miguel Ibarra didn't translate necessarily.
Nah. Yeah.
Yeah, there are a lot of question marks with Minnesota.
There are a lot of
and
question marks.
I looked at the stadium. I looked at the schedule, and I was looking for Atlanta, Minnesota, and I know Minnesota fans are going to groan and be like, but don't compare us to us. Different, you know, different deal. But I'm like, you came at the same time. Inevitably, you're going to be compared. And you're at different ends of the spectrum.
Minnesota beat Atlanta this year.
They did.
Are you guys surprised that Minnesota fan, or at least this one, is so angry? Was it bad of an inaugural year?
I think what the issue was is the players that they promoted as cornerstone guys completely tripped, like Demidov, who were going into the year were supposed to be cornerstones. Now, I think they found cornerstones in Dunlady, in Ramirez. I agree on Molino as well, but it was not promising from the start.
Maybe they portrayed them as cornerstones, but they were not. Within the organization, this very much was a year where they had just spent the money on the stadium. They might not have had the money on transfers, and they literally thought that they had a team of all equals. And 2017 is about finding which of that team of equals could live up to 2018, 2019, and do the job.
And how many do you think they found?
Cronin, Birch. Ibsen gets slack, but I thought Ibsen was really good. Dunlady seems to be it.
Really good's an exaggeration, but also Birch and Cronin were guys they went out and got
because they screwed it up.
Because they screwed up with
process.
Fair point.
Yeah. Look, it's a long off season. The window just opened, so MLS teams have opportunities to make some changes. Big thanks to Dennis Hamlet, the sporting director of the New York Red Bulls, for joining us. We really enjoyed that conversation. Thanks to you for listening. All your thoughts, 401-206-0MLS is the Hot Take Hotline. Call us or text us. Email us. With that, we're going to go tromp our way through the snow to somewhere. We'll see you next time, everybody.